The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
That we were talking before the break with Sean Defoe, our political correspondent, about the updated National Development Plan. Jack Chambers is Minister for Public Expenditure, Infrastructure Reform and Digitalisation, and he is with me now. Minister, why does a big announcement like this matter?
Well, this is one of the most important announcements, I think, for our country over the next 10 years, and that we're putting aside and prioritising capital investment in our economy. For people that don't understand, the National Development Plan is the plan which drives delivery of new homes, new schools, new hospital facilities. But critically, what we're trying to prioritise in this plan is water and wastewater infrastructure, the energy infrastructure, and the transport infrastructure, where we know there's a serious deficit in all of the objective metrics. And part of the process I engaged in over the last number of months was trying to really prioritise those critical areas which underpin housing supply over the next number of years. And that will drive the growth and prosperity for the future. We know that there's a lot of global uncertainty, and with that we need to really double down on infrastructure investment, and it will create the jobs and provide the opportunities economically over the next 5 to 10 years.
So the language in this, it will enable 300,000 new homes by 2030. When people hear that and they're mindful of missed housing targets last year and the reality that we will miss them this year, they'll wonder why they should believe a target like that.
Well, there's two fundamentals to this. First of all, we want to meet the programme for government commitment of an average of 12,000 social homes per year. And that will need to be ramped up. But we have a record level of capital investment in housing of the Department of Housing of over 35 billion. It is the single biggest allocation in this National Development Plan. And secondly, the water infrastructure, which underpins housing supply, has been a serious constraint in villages and towns right across Ireland. And you speak to people who want to build a few homes where there's demand for homes, they don't have the wastewater treatment plant or they don't have the water supply. And this is to fully fund Irish water into the medium term. And that's involved trade-offs and choices in prioritising that. We also know in parts of the eastern side of Ireland and in the commuter belt, serious constraints to our grid and our energy system. And we're underpinning a direct equity injection of 3.5 billion euro into ESB and Airgrid, again, which will help housing supply in our economy. But I would say this is about, obviously, funding is the discussion today, but we need to continue the work that Minister Brown is doing on cutting through some of the regulation and the constraints which harm housing supply.
Yeah. But I guess funding hasn't been an issue in the past, over the last number of years. In recent years, it hasn't been. I mean, per capita, we actually invest more public funds in housing than almost any other country in Europe. We're big investors. And now, I know there's others who'd say we should be kind of bigger, and there's an ideological debate about that. Mm. But the reality is we are, and still we miss those targets. So people will wonder why talk of more money is necessarily going to work.
I wouldn't. That's not how I frame this conversation at all. I'm saying when the market is when the supply from the market's falling, it's appropriate that the state steps in to stabilise the position. And in parallel with that, we've had Minister Brown making decisions on reforming the RPZs. Obviously, there was some criticism around that, but it does help drive housing supply. Secondly, revising the apartment guidelines where they've collapsed, supply of apartments have collapsed in the last number of years, trying to that providing a catalyst to get that going. And there's also other decisions that he's making with the new national planning framework and zoning more land across our country. Again, all focused on supply. So I'd be absolutely clear, this is one element of a broader decision points we need to make on housing, which involves regulation and reform. And then separately, the reforms I'll be bringing through when it comes to accelerating infrastructure, some of the decision-making processes and the length of times a project goes from concept to delivery is often 10 years at this point. And many of your listeners will be fed up hearing about projects that they heard in 10 years ago that haven't yet commenced. And that a focus of mine is to complement what we've set out today with how we reform our delivery systems and decision-making within government so that we don't slow things down.
And how do we do that? How do we reform those delivery systems?
We'll have a barriers to infrastructure report going to government in the next number of weeks. It has identified multiple areas of reform, some of which exist within my own department, and indeed in other government departments, and how the state in many ways is slowing things down in terms of the processes which have built up over time, sometimes in an individualised perception within a department, it may have been the right thing at a particular point, but the cumulative impact of processes is harming delivery. And I'll be bringing forward reforms and actions on that in the autumn.
And in your mind, what's the timescale for that body of work, that particular body of work, yeah. to get to a point where you say, listen, actually, the system is fine now. There may be other issues we've got to deal with, but yeah. I'm confident with the system and the pace of change.
So we'll set out, we've had significant engagement with market participants who see this from the outside, who have international experience. I've got private sector expertise on my infrastructure task force, all of which is focused on driving an infrastructure delivery. And collectively, we'll produce a report on the barriers. And then there'll be actions emerging from that in the autumn. And then the focus will be holding different parts of government to account on how they're not getting in the way of infrastructure delivery. And again, the singular focus, which has to be housing supply. It is the single biggest social issue affecting everybody across our country. And it's the number one priority for me. But it's not only a conversation about what we spend. And sometimes that has become the ever-growing political debate on how much we're allocating being the metric of housing policy. It's as much about the state cutting through the barriers and the some of the regulation which is harming the market delivering more.
The 80,000 odd workers we need to deliver on all of these projects, where are we going to get them?
So we've seen, if you look at there's been about 170,000 people working in our construction sector presently, and that's increasing. The number of apprenticeships has grown exponentially since the Department of Further and Higher Education was established, and that's continuing, and that pipeline of construction workers will expand. Separately, particularly on housing supply, we need to further embrace modern methods of construction where there's productivity dividends from that in terms of the number of workers required. And the level of productivity in our construction sector doesn't match many of our European comparators.
But even with that increased productivity, the report still talks about 80,000 workers. I mean, that's close to a 50% increase in the numbers working in construction at the moment.
Some of the reforms in terms of modern methods of construction and use of digital and innovation and technology within the construction sector reduces the actual numbers required to deliver.
So we won't need 80,000. Well, so why does the report, why does it talk about 80,000? Does that not take into account those modern methods?
Well, there hasn't been full implementation of this in parts of our construction sector. But part of it will be what we train and ramping up the apprenticeship, which is happening. I think it's increased 9% year on year. And some of it will be in terms of the European labour market and having more construction workers to meet the level of infrastructure demand in our economy. And it's both, in addition to more efficient, productive use of modern methods of construction.
Where are they going to live, people who come from the European labour market, to build here?
Yeah, well, look, there's obviously pressure in terms of housing supply, and that's why we've been clear in terms of prioritisation of the capital allocations we're making today, so that we've tried to ramp up capital spending incrementally over the next 5 years, so it's not a single jump in one given year, and I suppose that's part of the ramping up of this is to meet the overall level of demands in the economy.
Can I ask then about a couple of areas? So Metrolink, there's a commitment of €2 billion earmarked. How much of the overall Metrolink budget would €2 billion represent?
So we've yet to, I mean, obviously it has to come out of the planning process. We know it could cost up to €11 billion or more or less.
23, I think.
Depending on, there's a huge range in the business cases that were conducted.
And 23 is the upper end of that range.
So what we've profiled is the construction cost. If the construction was commenced, the construction cost would be at the back end of this decade and could be in and around €2 billion. And that's why separately we've set out a capital profile of €100 billion post 2030 to pay for.
That's where the bulk of Metrolink will actually be funded.
The drawdown would be in the we know it's a project, a mega project that would be delivered through the 2030s. If it came out of planning and it was tendered for and commenced.
The report as well, and this brings us back to housing, talked about one of those cost-cutting measures, as well as, you know, modern methods of design and construction, being, how did it describe it? A standardised social housing design. Can you expand on that and what that means or what that looks like for people?
So Minister Brown is already progressing that. First of all, he has cut the four-stage approval process down to one stage, and to go through the gateway in the Department of Housing, it is to have an overall standardised design for social housing, and that's to cut the whole design process down in terms of cost, but also as a signal to the market to try and drive overall supply. And that's a piece of work he's advancing.
We're going to be speaking to a couple of different people on the show a little bit later. Mairead Farrell from Sinn Féin. We're going to be speaking formally with the Fiscal Advisory Council. Danny McCoy from IBEC is popping into us. IBEC had a couple of interesting observations. You know, the broadly welcoming of the level of ambition. They suggest the government should commit to embedding a fiscal investment target within fiscal rules as a, I guess, as a floor below which we will not go when it comes to infrastructural investment. They talk of kind of the feast or famine approach maybe in this state up until now. Is that something you'd be willing to do?
We've been very clear today with myself and Minister Unruh, who are working on the medium-term fiscal plan. And what we're at within government is protecting the capital investment we've set out today, notwithstanding economic deterioration.
Beyond personal commitment, though, would you embed that in within fiscal rules, as IBEC suggests?
Well, we'd examine that around our new medium-term fiscal plan. But I think it's a principle of protecting capital investment if there's a deterioration. In previous economic points of economic deterioration, our economy capital investment went to 2 to 3 billion a year, and we're paying the price of that right now with the infrastructure pressures that exist in our economy. And it's actually in at points where the economy reduces that you need to step in a greater way, and protecting capital investment is fundamental to our wider economic planning.
They also talked about, and you've already touched on this, the need to improve kind of systems of delivery and state-imposed barriers, and you acknowledge some of them even within your own department, and there's a report due on that front. They talked, though, as well, and I'm sure Danny McCoy will expand on this later, how this type of investment, infrastructure and investment, should be prioritised over tax cuts or spending increases, you know, into the future. This should be the number one priority. And I just wonder, in terms of the summary economic statement, which we had as well today, I mean, the language that you yourself have used in recent weeks and months is about, you know, serious risk to the economy, a future clouded in uncertainty, thousands of jobs could be lost, the significant economic headwinds. And then we have a summary economic statement that talks of, you know, 1.5 billion in tax cuts and, you know, 8 odd billion euro in public spending. How do you think cutting taxes and increasing spending is the wise thing to do in the context of the fraught future, as you describe it yourself?
So there's two, just in terms of spending, first of all, there's two adjustments we've made in for next year's budget compared to last year's budget. First of all, we've no one-off measures, which contributed to an extra 2 billion euro of spending in last year's budget, which doesn't exist in his summer economic statement. And then secondly, what we've been clear about is the level of current expenditure has to stick within what is set out in on budget day. And the trend of and growth of overall public expenditure has been the in-year decisions over the last 5 years, which has increased from, say, if it was 6% announced on budget day to an average of 9% when you do a look back on expenditure in the last 5 years. So ensuring we've greater fiscal discipline and adherence to public financial procedures within departments so that the budget they get is the budget they stick to is essential to moderating current spending. And we'll set out our medium-term expenditure profile on budget day. Yeah. And I expect current
It's a slightly different issue, though, with respect, Minister. Cost overruns and announcements kind of outside the budgetary cycle. But this is about the announcement that are expected that you're going to be standing up and Pascal Dunne is going to stand up and make in the Dáil the month after next or the month after that. And it's 7.9 billion euro in additional spending, 1.5 billion euro in tax cuts. It's a bigger tax cut package than last year before Donald Trump was even elected.
Well, some of the measures Minister Dunne will be examining is tax policy from a competitiveness perspective and how that contributes to the future growth and prosperity of the Irish economy. We're coming at this from a point of surplus and full employment. And what's essential, the overall growth in public spending next year, 2 billion of that will be an increase in capital spending, which we know is crucial to driving that growth and prosperity in the medium term.
Do you think that's prudent?
But what we've said
to
is
cut taxes. When you yourself talk about how fraught the economic future might be.
What we've said is if there's a economic deterioration and a serious impact from the current discussions which are ongoing, we'll revisit what was set out in the summer economic statement. And that's the appropriate and responsible thing to do. And the context in which that will be framed will be protecting capital spending and revising our other plans. And that was said by me earlier today. And I'm absolutely transparent about that.
Yeah, but the decisions you will make over the next few weeks and months lock our spending in for 12 months thereafter. And Donald Trump, as we know, is want to change his mind at the drop of a hat. You know what I mean? Just because there may be an extension post-August or there might be a 10% imposition of tariffs for the time being, he could change his mind. He could go after the pharmaceutical sector at some point post our budgetary cycle. And yet we've locked in all of this increased spending and tax cuts. I just think there's going to be people listening to this and they can't understand how they've listened to all of these warnings from yourself and Pascal Donoghue for so long, and then they look at the summary economic statement and it's basically a repeat of last year without the one-off measures.
Well,
tax cuts for everyone,
no.
Increased spending for everyone else.
Well, what we're trying to do is we're meeting much of the existing levels of service year on year. Separately then, it's to remove the one-offs which we've set out, and also having much greater discipline in year, which has been a significant contributor to the overall expenditure growth in the last 5 years, which averaged 9%.
Yeah.
And that in itself will help to moderate current expenditure.
You're not screwing over people who are struggling with the cost of living at the moment more than anyone else. Like, you look at that summary economic statement and you compare it to budget 2025, and yet the big change is those one-off measures. You're committing, despite all of the uncertainty, you're committing to the same tax package, actually a bigger tax package, and almost the same spending package. You're just not helping people with their electricity bills.
We'll want to help. Like, what we've set out is 5.9 billion euro of measures we can take on current expenditure. And what will inform that is the decisions we can make, which will have to be sustainable and affordable. And some of that will be to help the pressures that people are under, but that will have to be done within the parameters of the budget process. And like we look back on last year and previous years, what we've done in education and affordability on school books and free school meals and other supports for families, we want to make sure that the decisions we make, we can continue over the long term. And that's a more responsible approach to economic management.
Well, I mentioned some of those guests we're going to be speaking to later. Danny McCoy from IBEC, Mairead Farrell from Sinn Féin, people formerly of the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, people involved in public transport and others. We'll be getting their sense of the updated National Development Plan. As we say, big in ambition. The proof will be in the pudding when it comes to delivery. Minister for Public Expenditure, Jack Chambers. Minister, thanks a million.
Thanks very much, Kieran.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.